This is Pacifica Radio. We are in Houston at the moment, but we're going out across several other stations. Welcome to our coverage of the first presidential debate. You heard Jim Lehrer at the end there mention the second one. We'll be with you on the air for that as well. My name is Mark Bowie, and we have two guests with you for the next 25 minutes, roughly until the top of the hour. They are Richard Wolff, Professor of Economics Emeritus at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where he taught economics from 73 to 2008. He is currently visiting professor in the Graduate Program in International Affairs of the New School University in New York. He also teaches classes regularly at the Brecht Forum in Manhattan. He's the author of multiple books. We may have time to mention a few of them, but if you are a Pacifica listener in New York, you can tune in to WBAI 99.5 FM on Saturdays and listen to him there. I'm sure you'll get details of his show in just a few seconds. And we're also going to be joined by George Farah. He is the founder and executive director of Open Debates and an antitrust attorney. He's also the author of a book himself called No Debate: How the Republican and Democratic Parties Secretly Control the Presidential Debates. So we're going to go, I think, probably to both of them at the same time if we can. But we'll go first to George. First of all, let me welcome them both to the air. George, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on. And Richard, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. Okay. Well, Richard, if you don't mind just holding for a second, I'm going to go to George first. George, for people who may not be familiar with the history of debates or the context that all of this kind of showmanship takes place in, give us briefly, if you could, an idea of what the debates actually are versus what you think and what Open Debates thinks they should be.
Well, the organization that runs our presidential debates is called the Commission on Presidential Debates. It sounds like a government agency, a nonpartisan entity, but it's not. It's a private corporation financed by Anheuser-Busch and other major companies, and it was created by the Republican and Democratic parties for the specific purpose of seizing control of the presidential debates from the League of Women Voters. And they did so precisely because the League was such an effective sponsor. The League fought for the inclusion of popular independent candidates. It fought to ensure the formats were challenging and creative. And because they were instructing the parties and their candidates what debate they could participate in and under what conditions, the parties got together and conspired to create this Commission on Presidential Debates, which routinely allows the candidates to exert undue influence over determinations about candidate selections, who gets to participate, and often about format. Though I must say that tonight's debate was groundbreaking and that the format was, for the first time ever, more of a debate than at an actual bipartisan press conference. So we congratulate the commission. It is heeding our request, our advocacy that we've been pushing for the last 8 years, and pushing for more aggressive formats, meanwhile excluding all third-party voices.
And some of that format change, George, might be down to the fact that some sponsors have dropped out, so it looks like the commission is under some pressure.
Yes, we managed to convince three, and it's not just us, it's us and 17 other pro-democracy organizations that have been highly critical of the Commission on Presidential Debates and have called for its replacement with a nonpartisan sponsor. But we managed to convince three of the 10 major companies that pay for the Commission on Presidential Debates to withdraw their support. This has never happened. I've been pushing for this for 8 years, and finally, three of the companies have backed out and refused to give any money or in-kind contributions to the commission because they no longer want to be affiliated with an organization that is perceived as being anti-democratic. So it's starting to penetrate the public consciousness that something's wrong with our presidential debate, that a private corporation financed by Anheuser-Busch and co-chaired by the former heads of the Republican and Democratic parties is not the appropriate entity to be running our most important public forums.
Well, controlling the way the debate is presented, I think, goes a long way towards cementing the two-party system. And you mentioned the exclusion of any independent or third-party candidates. When, just for historical perspective, is the last time there was a presidential debate that wasn't just the Republican and a Democratic candidate?
Well, in 1992, Ross Perot managed to get into the presidential debates. The Perot story is absolutely fascinating, and I'll quickly tell it. In 1992, Perot managed to get in, not because the commission invited him. The commission, it is a huge public misconception. The commission likes to tout his inclusion as evidence of its support of third parties if they're actually viable. The commission lobbied to exclude Ross Perot in 1992, and it was only because then Republican President George H.W. Bush and challenger Bill Clinton insisted on Perot's inclusion that he was allowed to participate. And this was only because President Bush actually thought, mistakenly, that Perot would take more votes away from Bill Clinton than from him. But if you fast forward 4 years later, Ross Perot's excluded, even though in 1996, he ran for president again. He had $29 million in taxpayer funds. 3/4 of the American people wanted to see him. But this time, Bob Dole wanted to keep Perot out, and Bill Clinton, who was running for re-election, didn't want anyone watching the debate. Hmm. So they reached a secret agreement where Bill Clinton agreed to exclude Perot on the condition that the one debate was canceled and the remaining two debates were scheduled opposite the World Series, so no one watched them. And that's what we had. A candidate we wanted to see was kept out of the debates. The debates were scheduled opposite the baseball playoffs, so it attracted the lowest audience in history, and we had a very stilted format. And this is the kind of shenanigans that can happen when there's a bipartisan commission loyal to the two parties running our debate.
Well, that's I think, very valuable context, and I think people would be well advised to go to the website of Open Debates, which is opendebates.org, and read a lot more about it. George, if you don't mind staying with us, so we may have time to come back to you for a couple more questions. But tonight's debate, as we expected, Richard, had a lot of references to the economy and to economics and to tax cuts and deficit spending and various things. What did you make just overall of the economic talk and the absence of context? For example, both of them, both Obama and Romney, said things like not cutting taxes on various people versus cutting taxes on others, without really referencing historically where taxes were. Obama did once at one point reference returning taxes to where they were under Clinton, but the big picture of where taxes have gone in this country over the last, say, 60 years was not there.
Well, that was the most impressive thing to me as a professional economist, which is this is a debate that systematically avoided and evaded most of the urgent matters about our economic crisis. It was really astonishing to watch these two people waste our time with irrelevant details while they systematically kept away from some of the basic questions. And let me briefly mention them. The single most obvious question about unemployment, jobs, which they kept talking about, is this. The last time we had a crisis of this dimension, the solution that was found by the then President Roosevelt was to create and fill 12.5 million jobs, and to do that as a federal program where the government hired people, giving them a job, giving them an income, allowing them to maintain the mortgage payments to hold on to their homes, and all the rest. Here we have a great crisis in which both candidates claim to be interested in jobs, and there's not one word about the one successful program in the 1930s that put people back to work. No one is saying for or against a public employment program. It's as if we were all supposed to be invited into a case of stupefying amnesia, forgetting all of American history, so that neither the questions nor the two candidates' answers came in any way close to that. My suspicion is, if they discussed it at all beforehand, they got an agreement between these two parties that this is embarrassing and difficult. They don't want to deal with it. The rich and the corporations in the country don't want to hear about it. So we'll never know anything about it. And these two people act like it didn't exist. The second example, equally, is all this conversation about lowering taxes on corporations and by implication on the wealthy to create jobs. This is economic nonsense. If you cut taxes on corporations and rich people, all you've done is put more money in the hands of corporations and rich people, the money they used to pay in taxes, but you've now lowered them, so they don't have to do that. They don't have to pay the taxes. There's nothing in anything either candidate said to indicate that they were willing to make sure that the rich and the corporations, if their taxes were cut, would use the money to create jobs. It's as if they imagine there's some automatic mechanism, but there isn't, which the corporations often use the reduction of taxes to pay their executives more. Even if they were to create jobs, entirely a voluntary matter on their part that neither candidate had anything to say about, the high likelihood is they will create jobs where wages are low, that is in China, India, and 50 other places that will not provide jobs for Americans. Not one word was said about that problem. Not one word was said about anything either candidate would do to make sure that a tax cut on these rich people would do, or these corporations would do, one thing to create jobs. It's something which, if graduate students or even undergraduate students in economics argued the way these two candidates did, they'd flunk the course.
Well, Richard, they did both seem to agree on cutting corporate taxes being a good thing.
Yes, they seemed to imagine that this was one of these unambiguous good things, but it's really childish. You know, all economists know that large corporations today, partly because they pay lower taxes than ever before, are sitting on roughly $2 trillion in cash, which they are not investing, which they are not using to create jobs. Was there one word about what either candidate would do to make sure that that money stopped sitting idle, keeping us in a crisis, and was used to create jobs? Not a word. They want to cut taxes, and all that will do is create even more money these corporations are unlikely to invest. And it's a topic they couldn't say a word about because we're all supposed to believe, as if we were three-year-olds, that if you cut the taxes of corporations and the rich, wonderful things will happen, notwithstanding a mountain of evidence that nothing of the sort is guaranteed. If I could say one more thing, I was amazed at the endless number of times we were told about how important education is by both candidates and how they're committed to it, both candidates, because it is so important for the future of our economy, both candidates, and what they're going to do. Here's what both candidates didn't want to say, with one brief exception by Mr. Obama quickly passing over it. Over the last 5 years, with the active connivance of Republicans and Democrats alike at both the federal and state level, we have laid off more teachers than in any comparable period in half a century. We have cut subsidies for students. We have forced an entire generation of college students to take on unmanageable levels of debt to get a bachelor's degree, which no longer gives them a job that will enable them to pay off the debt. We have savaged our school systems at all levels. And we listen to candidates who don't say a word about it, who have blithe, bland comments on how much they love education, even though both of them have presided in their states and at the federal level over the complete destruction of our education system, hobbling us into the future. Once again, a debate that not only didn't address these questions, but acted like they weren't there.
I'm going to come back to you in a minute, Richard, because I do want to get into some more of the economic issues. I know you said President Obama referenced it in passing. You might be talking about when he said, you know, making it more affordable for students to take, you know, do college degrees, whether those are 2 or 4 year programs. But,
right.
But George, I want to bring you back in. You said that you congratulated the commission on the change of the format, and it did seem to me a little bit, and you know, it shows you how low the bar was, because it seemed better than I was expecting. It seemed like the candidates actually spoke to each other more than I thought that they would, and they were more challenging to each other than I expected them to be. It didn't sound as prepared as I was expecting it to sound. I thought the moderator did a horrible job, but that's a separate topic. For people who are not regular debate watchers, or for those who are going to watch the rest of the debates, and they're all going to be covered here on Pacifica as well, what do you say about this debate in the sort of general context? I know tomorrow the media is going to be full of the pundits and prognosticators basically trying to pick a winner, as if somehow an hour and a half is going to, you know, tell us which is the better candidate, which I don't think it does. But for your money, in the context of debates in general, where do you see this one fitting? And did you think that either one of them did particularly better than the other, noticeably so?
In the context, on the first point on the format, you know, I am a fierce critic of the commission. I spent the last 8 years as executive director and founder of this organization berating the commission for its anti-democratic functions and its unwillingness to insist on the challenging format. But I have to say that the format that they established tonight was actually groundbreaking, irrespective of the fact that there was a substantial amount of ideological containment and very narrow focus, especially on economic issues. I'm in total agreement. But when it comes specifically to format, if you compare these debates with debates that have been held over the last 25 years under the commission's tenure, there's no comparison. And 4 years ago, candidates were allowed to have a 90-second response, followed by a 60-second rebuttal, followed by a 30-second surrebuttal, and that was the end of it. We moved on to the next question. This was a free-flowing conversation and forced the candidates, at times at least, to get off some of their memorized sound bites and actually think and confront each other a little bit. As for your second point, to me, I'm a progressive, and it's painful for me to say this, but unequivocally, this was a Romney victory in my mind. It was the president looked weak and haggard. Romney looked fresh. It looked like Romney was a professional candidate who had survived 27 Republican primary debates. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, President Obama is now a rusty debater who's been insulated from direct personal attacks for 4 years. And there was actually a little moment that I think is going to be replayed over and over, especially on Fox News. And that's when Obama actually tells Jim Lehrer at one point, I had 5 seconds until you interrupted me. And that's going to be played up as the president is arrogant, he's condescending to the moderator, and it's one of those stylistic mistakes that get rerun over and over again following the debate. So in my mind, there's no doubt this was an enormous victory for the Romney campaign, and is likely to actually have a substantial effect on shaking the race.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I mean, based on what I saw and what I heard during the debate, I mean, even from the very beginning, and I don't know if you want to mention this at all, George, but it seemed to me like Obama's first opening statement was to talk about his anniversary with his wife and you know, sort of general fluffy, non-specific stuff, whereas Romney launched into a presentation on economic plans and specifics and policy and differences almost from the very beginning, and he did seem a lot sharper, I think, in my opinion. I don't know if you noticed that from the outset.
I absolutely feel the same way. You know, I think the form that Obama didn't come off. It felt like this was the first time that Obama had ever been in a debate.
Right.
He seemed uncomfortable with navigating that space between silly little zingers like "Happy anniversary to my wife" and very complex, nuanced policy statements that have a tough time actually penetrating the public's imagination. Meanwhile, Romney was able to occupy that space in the middle, that space where you're actually able to make sense to millions of people while couching your policies in understandable sound bites. He was very, very effective in making those points. So Obama either came off as a little bit artificial, or he came off as very professorial and talking in nuance and complexity and lacking the kind of conviction and passion and outrage that we hope and expect to see from him, at least when he's giving an individual speech. So it was a very disappointing night, I think, for all the president's supporters around the country.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, he's going to be berated from all angles on that performance, because I don't see perhaps anyone but his strongest performers thinking that he did well. I think, especially if you're not very familiar with the specifics and the facts, Romney's presentation won, clearly, hands down, on so many things, just his ability to carry the discussion to the president rather than be defensive, as Obama seemed to me. George,
yeah,
I think...
I'd like to just mention... I'm sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to say one thing. You know, I think that Obama, if you actually fact-check the debate, was about 50 times more honest and accurate than Romney, but that is often besides the point. A very telling moment of the debate was when Romney was lecturing Obama about how Dodd-Frank is supporting big banks and injuring small regional banks, as if Romney's couching himself as a champion of small businesses and small banks and hostile to large banks that are too big to fail. I mean, that's ridiculous. And at no point did Obama attack Romney at the places that he's most vulnerable. You never heard the words 47% or Bain Capital or outsourcing or that corporations are people too. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't care about poor people very much, or I'm not worried about them. All the gaffes that have been critical to Romney's poor polling numbers were not mentioned once by the president, and I really don't understand that tactic. It's incomprehensible to me.
It is very strange, and I actually wrote a note to myself while they were talking that if you listen to the debate in a way that is void of facts, Romney is the clear winner. If you have a basic idea of the facts, the results are not nearly so clear, even though Obama came off worse. At least that was my take on it, and you know, people criticize me for giving my opinion too freely on my show, and well, there's a little bit more of it. George, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I know we're probably not going to have time to get back to you. If you want to hang on the line, you're absolutely welcome to do so. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, and Richard, I know you must be chomping at the bit to get into some of the specifics. Let's start off a little bit with the Simpson-Bowles idea, because both candidates mentioned it as being good or bad in various ways, and they also talked about Dodd-Frank and banks that are too big to fail and so on. But it seemed to me like neither candidate really married any of those things to the reality. I mean, Obama at one point said that, you know, the banks were selling things they didn't understand, and also somehow managed to blame people for taking loans out on homes that they couldn't afford. But there was no real discussion of what actually caused the banking crisis or how the government responded to it, first under President Bush and then the continuation and expansion of it under President Obama. What do you make of all of that?
Well, again, I think it's a study in the irrelevance of these two candidates to anything that is real. I mean, we have a real history of regulation in the United States. We had a crisis in the 1930s that produced a number of changes. We regulated the banks, we regulated many of our industries, we put heavy taxes on corporations and the rich to help rebuild the economy. Once the war was over in 1945, having left the corporations in the hands of rich people and boards of directors and shareholders, those shareholders and boards of directors went to work to undo and erase and roll back the New Deal, get rid of the regulations, drop the taxes on corporations and the rich, and they were stunningly successful in doing so. So the real question is whether, in a capitalist society, if the government even gets to the point of regulating, whether it ever makes any difference, because you have a structure called the private capitalist corporation that has every incentive and that has all the resources to evade, weaken, and eventually overturn those regulations. So either you have some way to prevent that from happening, which neither candidate said a word about, or you are asking us to simply reproduce what happened last time, which we know was a process of passing and undoing regulations, and if we do that again, it will be just as unsuccessful. Neither candidate addressed it. And then when Mr. Romney, in a stunning effort to play games with assuming that the American people don't know, and says that our health system has the best records in the world, it is, you know, you have to hand it to the man. Every study by the World Health Organization, by every responsible journal, indicates that the United States spends more on health than any other country on earth and gets results that are in the low end of mediocre. Our longevity is less than many other countries. Our child health status, our deaths of young people, wherever you look, we get a lousy medical results, but we spend twice or more what any other country does. It's a broken health system, fundamentally dysfunctional. The Obamacare doesn't deal with it, and Mr. Romney doesn't even want to do that. And instead of calling anybody on it, instead of making that issue real, we have a moderator who pretends that the evasions of these two candidates is the basis of a debate. So maybe Mr. Romney won in some performance sense, but neither of these candidates has any interest in, any approach to, any systematic confrontation with the economic crisis we're in. I would look upon this debate as, if you pardon me, a weapon of mass distraction from the issues of our society, and I wonder whether the whole election isn't really that.
Well, so if I can characterize or maybe even caricature your position a little bit, and forgive me if I'm mistaken and correct me if I am, it sounds like it was Punch and Judy, right? And we're trying to figure out whether Punch won or Judy won.
That's right. We're watching something that doesn't matter. We have no idea what these people are going to do, and that's consistent with American politics. They are engaged, as Mr. Romney was during the Republican primaries, in winning what the next race is. What that implies for the future, what either one of these people is going to do, heaven knows, they don't know, and most importantly, what they showed us tonight is they don't care. Well, they are playing a game that is pandering to a notion that we are not a society in the worst economic crisis of an entire generation.
Richard, I have to do better than Jim Lehrer and interrupt you, because I'm afraid we're really out of time, but I want to thank you so much for being with us. Richard Wolff, Professor of Economics, Emeritus University of Amherst. His website is rdwolf.com, and George Farah, founder and executive director of Open Debates. Thank you both so much for being with us. We are going to be back with you on the air here on October the 11th, which is a week and a day from now, for the foreign and domestic policy debates between the vice presidential candidates. That is at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. We'll see you then. Goodbye.